Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Greetings and salutations. It's certainly good to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap for today. We take a look at justice for Eric Garner. He's the 43-year-old Port Richmond man who died following an incident with the police in Tompkinsville on Thursday. We also take a look at foreign policy and immigration. We ask the simple question, is America the world police? And of course, at the top of the hour, we take a look at the Black Acre Policy Forum with our special guest, Leo Baron Hicks. We discuss this and much, much more. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And now to help me break all of this down, is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprises, and also the author of a brand new book called Reflections, What I Know to Be True. I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So the pleasure is always mine. So I want to start off with Eric Garner and the incident with the Port Richmond Tompkinsville police. And I want to kind of get your take on that. But for those that other people don't know, now, despite media reports to the contrary, no determination has yet been made for the cause of death, right? So I want to put that out in the atmosphere now. And a spokeswoman for the city medical examiner's office said today that the cause and the manner of death are pending further studies and no findings will be released until the investigation is complete. And so, but for the most part, for those people that may not be aware of this, I actually seen the video and it's kind of disturbing the way it kind of evolved. And so what the thought that kind came to mind to me was that how some people get the benefit of the doubt, right? So that phrase, the benefit of the doubt, is a very powerful phrase, especially when you're up against people in authority. So some people are presumed innocent, but others are presumed guilty for whatever reason, right? That's what I mean by giving the benefit of the doubt. And this young man, Eric Gardner, certainly was not given the benefit of the doubt in this particular situation. So for those of you that had not heard or have not seen the video, I would encourage you to go out to the Daily News and .com, and they have several videos recounting the activities that happened. But from what I gathered, basically there was a fight that took place. There was a scuffle. This young man, Eric Gardner, kind of broke up the fight. This is what eyewitness accounts gave. And the police arrive on the scene, and rather than asking questions or perhaps trying to assess everybody, what they kind of cornered this young man and started asking questions about selling cigarettes. And so he defended himself by saying, look, I'm not selling any cigarettes here. I'm not doing anything illegal. You guys come out here and you always do this. You make these accusations. You keep harassing me. Now, this is the language he used. And then, moments later, the cops, for no reason, no apparent reason. Now, I'm looking at this, and you really can't, you don't know, understand the hostility may take. I mean, he's a big guy. He's a 300-pound guy. But he was not acting in any threatening manner. And so, again, kind of recapping the events, what happened was the police, one guy grabbed him from behind and put him into a chokehold. So that was first. The second guy grabbed his arm, and then within a matter of minutes, you had about 7-8 police officers, taking the man to the ground, putting their knee into his head, holding him down, putting handcuffs on him, and all the while, one of them, the officers, was choking him, holding him. He says, gasping for air, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. He said it over and over and over to about 3 or 4 times. And then all of a sudden, he just stops breathing and he lays there still. So this is about 5, 6, 7 minutes past that the guy's laying here. You would expect, that they would call the medical authorities on the scene. That did not happen. So they were still constraining him. Now, at this point, you got so many eyewitnesses down saying, why are you doing this to this guy? Making these statements and everything. And then they tell him, they said he didn't do anything but break up a fight. And they got this all on video. And so, and then it goes on, and a couple of days later, he passes away. So Gene, my question is to you, I don't want to be too cynical when I make this statement, but why is this always happening to African-American people that the police continues to do this to? I mean, why is it that we don't get the benefit of the doubt?
Well, we don't get the benefit of the doubt because there's no value to our life. And I know, some will say, wow, that's such a broad statement, and I kind of painted a big brush there. And I did. I used a big brush because, just last week or the week before, we were talking about the lady out in California who was obviously mentally ill walking on the highway, and the police, the highway patrol out there, beat her down, and you have video proof of it, and you see her in a defensive stance. She's not fighting back or anything. She's curled up in a ball trying to block him for punching her in her face, and she wasn't doing nothing but walking in the middle of the street, so they should have told her she was crazy on a busy highway. And so we keep having these conversations, and the thing that makes this so disturbing with this particular case here is that, if my memory is correct, and in listening to Reverend Al this week, I believe that particular technique in terms of the chokehold, they outlawed that in that particular area of New York. They're not able to, and by that I mean the police officers are no longer able are supposed to use that technique to gain control of someone, the chokehold. So they got a lot of issues here with this in terms of using something that was unnecessary. A, well, first, using a technique that's no longer mandated and supported by the department. That there in itself is a major violation. Number two, looking at the video and how and everything that led up to it, all of it was unnecessary. I mean, he wasn't even doing anything.
Typically what you have people acting in a threatening manner or doing something like that, but this guy was not, you know, being hostile. He was just saying, look, I ain't doing anything, guys. Why y'all keep resting? You know, he didn't huff up at him or anything like that. So, you know, for he, in some cases, you see where people kind of, you know, yeah, they deserve to get, not beat down by the police, but at least they were being aggressive. He was being more defensive. He was stating his case. And I think, you know, when I watched a couple of people put on Facebook about how a nun minority would go out and make statements to the police, like this truck driver did a few days ago by saying, why are you stopping me? Why are you speeding? And stuff like that. It went viral. And then you had another guy telling the police about his rights and what he can and cannot do. They get the benefit of the doubt. But this young man obviously didn't get the benefit of the doubt.
And we don't get the benefit of the doubt because we have been painted to be aggressive at all times. We've painted to be angry. We've been painted to be doing something wrong. So the mindset is if there's a group of black people around, something wrong is going on. The mindset is there's this big black man. He has to be doing something illegal over here on this corner because that's just what they do. And so that, you know, that's the reason why, you know. And the unfortunate part of it is there are parts of our community that feeds into that stereotype, that feeds into those negativities. And so as an officer on the street, you know, sometimes it is life and death, and you got a split second to think about whether or not this is a legitimate grouping of people or whether it's not. But it's still all in the approach of how you do it. If you're unsure, you already can be having backup on the way. And if you're that unsure, you probably don't need to be a daggone police officer. Every situation can't be one that, you know, that requires you to use deadly force. You know, I don't know whatever happened to subduing and shooting to injure, not necessarily shooting to kill. I mean, I don't know what happened to all those things that really made us feel like the police was a part of the community. They're no longer really a part of the community anymore. They're a menace to the community at this juncture.
Exactly right. You know, and I was saying that at some point, you know, they need to come out and they need to start building relationships with people in the community. So, therefore, you know, it won't be every time I see a police officer, it's because something is wrong, right? They need to be a part of the community as if to build relationships so people will know that, you know, they are our friend. They are here to protect and serve. But, you know, nowadays, I wonder, you know, is the whole idea of protect and serve is not allocated to the society at large. Now, I know you mentioned earlier about the young lady being beat down on the highway, and there was a video of that as well. And she was obviously helpless, and the fact that, you know, she had a mental illness. But what happens when you have someone that like Aris, a professor at the University of Avron State University, Dr. Ursula Orr, that was just crossing the street because something was in her way, and she gets harassed by the police. I mean, so it's not just relegated to somebody that's huge and humongous and threatening or somebody that's mentally ill. Here we have a respectable professor at Arizona State University and PhD Dr. Ursula Orr, and she gets, you know, pretty much taken the handle by the police. What's going on here?
Right. Well, that's just it. I mean, I think the police at this juncture, they're in certain parts of the country, and it's kind of really widespread now because it's happening in almost every corner. Almost, I think there's this fear of black people for whatever reason. There's a stereotype. Some of it is just straight. I'm in control, and I'm gonna show you that I can control you as well. They have, you know, some of it is their own mental issue that they're dealing with that happens to only come out when they're dealing with black people. Because as you stated, when someone else of a different race questions them or says, why are you following me or why are you doing this, it's not met with the same level of hostility that it is when a black person does it. Just like with the professor, her question was, why do you need my ID? And why do you need this? And because she was asking, and then people were saying, well, she should have just gave it to him. I didn't know why you needed it. I mean, I don't think
exactly.
That was a...
That's within her right to do that. That's within her right to ask that question.
Exactly. I don't think she was out of order for asking the question. You know, and then he gets upset because she's asking the question, and now becomes a power and control issue. And so I think, you know, it's unfortunate that this is a time that we live in and that officers as of late, and that's not about all officers for sure, but lately they've been a little bit Johnny on the spot. I mean, you go back to the police officers in New Mexico that stopped the woman in the van in her car, and then they started shooting inside the vehicle, and she had kids in the car. You know, nothing about that was protocol. Regardless of what she said, regardless of what the kids were saying in the car, shooting at that vehicle when nobody's life was in danger, because she wasn't driving with any of them, she was driving away from them,
right,
was unacceptable. But, you know, once again, you know, here's this a black person and her family, her kids out on the highway, and she's like, I'm not going to be out here with y'all. And you know, we black and y'all white, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, she did go to an area that was more populated, and then, you know, stopped the car or whatever. But the fact that they felt like they need to shoot into the vehicle, you know, shoot at the car. I mean, those, and it's just, and these are the ones we hear about. It goes back to Trayvon Martin. And I say that because the people of Sanford, when all this kicked off about Trayvon Martin, the reason why they were not up in arms, so to speak, as much as the rest of the community was because it's like this happens all the time. And I don't know if you remember when MSNBC pulled down, I think it was Joy Ann Reid before she got her show, went down and sat in on some town hall meetings with the people, and Ben Jealous was down there when he was still president of NAACP, and they went down and they started talking about cases after cases after cases of situations where things like this had happened with the Sanford Police Department. So once you see something happen so many times, you just feel like, what is my motivation to say anything? And so there was no uproar, outcry for those from that community because they're like, we've been here before and nothing different is going to happen, so why bother? And so when you look at the case there in New York, the difference is that officer, A, is recorded. That's probably the main difference, because A, is it was recorded. Yeah. B, he is in direct violation of department policy and using that particular technique that is no longer mandated and approved by the department to use. So he's going to have to answer to that.
Yeah, you know, I want to piggyback on something you mentioned about Trayvon Martin, because the landmark decision of not guilty for George Zimmerman gave precedence for black life. It showed America that black life is not that important. And so, and since that time, I want to say that I've seen at least being reported of more incidents of these cases happening. Right. Not to say that there are more cases happening. I'm just saying there are more cases I'm seeing being reported of it happening. So it goes out that people have now, since the landmark decision of not guilty for George Zimmerman, goes out and says, OK, we can just do what we want to black life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We got a green light to do that because the jury has decided. America has decided. And so it looks as if to me that these cases or now, and then it's one thing for he said, she said, but these last three occurrences are talking about Dr. Ursula Orr, Eric Gardner, and the lady beaten on the highway, all videotaped. There's no dispute about what happened. I mean, it's people were saying, look, this is wrong, and I want to show America who you really are. You know, it's one thing when you go out and you say, yeah, he said this and she said that, and the police has the authority, and it's questionable about what you heard and what he says, the credibility. But when you have it on video and people seeing it, and they, it's not when it wasn't happening after the math. This video in particular was captured before the situation escalated. And so it shows a series of events that took place. It showed the fact that what happened and how it happened, and it showed the aftermath that took place. So, again, I mean, I'm going to say the landmark decision from Trayvon Martin, not guilty for George Zimmerman, gave precedence to America on black life in the 21st century. In the 21st century, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because there's, you know, we'll see more of instead of less than because of it, you know, and you will have more mothers mourn the loss of their sons and their daughters, and it is an epidemic across this country, the amount of gun violence that we experience on a daily basis in some of our urban cities and in some of our rural parts of the country. That it is sickening that we have not, if there are more of us that want some sort of gun control than those of us that don't. And so I'm not sure why we haven't been able to turn the tide of the Congress to force them to do something more than what they're doing based on the grade they will receive from the NRA. It just, I don't know how as a country we continue to allow ourselves to be held hostage by these fractions of population because they're not the majority. The NRA and some of its principles is not the majority of America. And so it just bothers me that we're so, for lack of a better word, lazy and complacent that we allow ourselves to be taken hostage and feel as though we have no rights and no recourse to do anything. When in the reality of it, we have more than what we realize, and that we are more powerful than what we realize. And so, you know, unless those officers are dealt with and dealt with swiftly, I know the one in California just reassigned to desk duty, and that hasn't set well with the people out there. I know the one in New York, I think he has been suspended right now, and that's going to go deep because I know Reverend Sharpton and National Action Network are already involved in that. I was listening the other day, and they had the representative from that area that's on the city council at large from that area. She was on talking about it as well, and they've already done some things with the family, so I'm pretty sure we will have some sort of justice in that particular case, but those things are happening all across the country, and there can only be so many Reverend Al's, you know. He's just one person, and so every community has to find their voice and find the one that's going to be the one fighting for them in these types of situations.
You know, I want to take a step back for a moment and kind of dissect a couple of your statements, particularly around there's only one Reverend Al Sharpton. And the fact that these things, these incidents, in particular police brutality, I wanted to, for lack of a better word, or these atrocities afforded against young or in middle-aged African-American males, you know, how do we get on the front side of these issues, right? I mean, you know, it's interesting is how the police don't go in the hood and doing these things because I don't think they're going to make it out. They pick these places to do this in isolation as if, you know, they can be protected in such a way. But how do we get on the front end of this so we could begin to make sure that young, just young black people in general are protected by the law? I mean, it has to be beyond policy because the policy is supposed to be out there to take care of everybody, but it's obviously not coming to pass. With the fact that you know there was reports of the KKK being in the police department, and so it begins to worry me. This fact that there may be more than we know about that's taking place in our society. But so how do we get on the front end of it? That's my question.
Well, I don't necessarily know if we can get on the front end of it, and I say that not happy with my statement, but I don't know that we can, because some of us don't believe until we see, you know, and so some of us don't believe that these sorts of things are still happening until we see the footage, and you know, until somebody starts to beat them upside the head. Or beat up someone that they know, or like I said, they see the footage, they don't believe it, and so because they don't believe it, they don't think there's anything that they need to do about it, they don't believe it happened where they are, or they don't believe. I mean, it's all of these reasons why not to do something, as opposed to the one reason to do it, and that is because it's the right thing to do. So we come up with these excuses as to it's not a problem in my neighborhood. It's a whole lot of things that are not a problem in my neighborhood, but it's still a problem, and I still need to be on the front end of it.
You know, that's interesting. You know, I can remember, I like going back to the bus boycott, because that was a real good example of people sticking together for a cause and getting good results. And so, but when we see these issues, people it seems to me, tend to compartmentalize these issues and say that, well, that happened in New York, you know, or that happens in Florida, or it happens at Arizona State University where a professor can get beat down. But the reality is these little small victories these people are having by beating these African-Americans up in these, it could potentially become an epidemic across the United States. So, I mean, we really need to get together and take a look at this. You know, as a policy issue, and it need to get out in front of this thing quickly, because it could get worse quickly.
Right, and unfortunately, it has gotten worse quickly. I mean, you look back over, and we just, I mean, you're a data man, so I can say this, and you can find it, and then we can talk about it another day. But I bet if you would, I mean, let's just go back 25 years ago, I want to say maybe probably, with the whole Rodney King issue. We thought we'd never see something like that again because of how graphic it was and what happened and all of that. And then you fast forward to what happened with Oscar Grant and there in California as well, that the movie Fruitvale Station was about Oscar Grant. And we're like, oh, yeah. And then you go up to what happened with the young man in New York that was sodomized and had the, you know, with the broomstick and things while he was in police custody. Oh, and then you go to Sean Bell, who was shot coming out of his bachelor party that night, the night before his wedding, and killed, and the rounds of bullets that went there. Oh, and then you go, I just keep going. I mean, you know, it continues. And I want to say something recently. Where was this? Where the informant, the people that was the young man that was part of the police case, and he was doing the deal. And he gave the code word to say the deal was messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Where was that at?
I think it was in. Let me go check my sources, but I think it was in somewhere out east. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then that happens, and then they shoot at him 23 times, and then the other guy they shoot at 52 times, and neither one of them had a gun anywhere near them. But according to the police report, they thought they were reaching for their weapons in their waistband. Although this guy was laying down on the ground, who's your informant, mind you, that you got laid out on the ground and you're going to shoot him 23 times and then you shoot the other guy 52 times? What weapon did they have that you had to shoot that much? Just curious. And so we keep saying, you know, it can't get worse, or it's not happening, when every week, if you listen to something outside of cable news, and you know, find out what's happening on ABC News and CBS News that tells you what's really happening in the world that you live in, you might find these stories and you'll hear about things that are impacting us as Americans a whole lot more than if you're listening to the entertainment that you get on some of your cable shows on all the networks, on CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, for sure. Fox News has to be the biggest entertainment I've seen in my life that's supposed to be a news channel.
Yeah, so, I mean, so basically, you're making the case for it being relevant to everybody now, right, as opposed to saying it's not happening in my neighborhood or I don't know these people or so far removed from my community. I mean, because we've just gave examples of all walks of life that has been impacted, right? So, you know, again, it seems to me as if, you know, if we don't get out in front of this now, it's going to get a lot worse real soon. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now to America's foreign policy. Specifically, I want to know the question to the listeners out there that is being posed to you is America the world police? Is America the world police? Now, I want to talk a little bit about an article in Mother Jones entitled, Can Obama Weather the Current Geopolitical Storm? And she used some more colorful words than that. She says Barack Obama is in charge of the world's most consequential superpower at a time when the world seems to be cracking up more than usual. A Malaysian airliner is shot down, presumably by Russian armed separatists in Ukraine. The two extreme for Al-Qaeda Islamic State, a Sunni force once allied with Washington-backed Syrian rebels fighting the Russian-supported Assad regime. has taken control of a swatch of territory in Syria and Iraq and set up an Islamic fundamentalist state that is waging war against the Shiite-dominated government of Iraq. Now, another issue that is, there's a humanitarian crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. And none of these matters are easily resolved, and many are interlinked. But the question is, should Obama declare a new Cold War against Russia? That could impede reaching a deal with Iran, as he support the Israeli military action in Gaza while decrying civil casualties caused by Israeli strikes. He further bolsters the United Association with Tel Aviv. Now, this is a time of dilemmas and, yes, hard choices. Hint, hint. A variety of polls in the past year have clearly showed the American public is not keen on U.S. military intervention in Syria, Ukraine, or Iraq. Yet, no doubt, Americans look to the president with a very powerful yearning. Fix it. That is, make the chaos go away and protect us. So, Jimmy, my question is to you. Is America the world police? Is it really incumbent upon us, United States of America, to always be engaged into these foreign affairs?
Here's the deal. So there's a short answer and a long answer. The short answer is no. But when you declared yourself to be the best and the baddest and the greatest and the one who proclaims to have and carry and live the moral high ground and high road, then the expectation is for you to go and do that. When you've done it before, see, nobody has any expectations of you if you ain't never done it before. But when you've done it before, mm-hmm. when you've helped other countries liberate themselves, and you mm-hmm. go back into the history of who we are as a nation and what we've done to help liberate other countries, then the expectation is that then that's what we do. We help bring safety to the world because we've done it in so many other instances. When you have that as your primary descriptor to describe who you are, then you have to go. The sad part is that where we are now as a country, with us being so divided internally, we don't have the right mindset is to be going out trying to do something somewhere else when where we are currently at home is in such disarray. So I can't go out and be this great mother to the community and my children are suffering and I'm not teaching my own child to read or I'm not keeping my own child clothed and fed and properly raised, but I'm out in the community preaching and laying hands on folk and I got all kind of hell going on in my own house. How can I do that? So America has to figure out what she needs to do for herself first. And that's not saying I'm not concerned about the rest of the world, but we got some things here that needs our attention and needs it quickly and quite immediately in order for us to be better equipped to deal with the world. So no, you know, we are not the world police. But we are because that's what we've done in the past. And
yeah,
that's
except,
the expectation.
You know, all those things we've done in the past, though, doesn't necessarily mean that we liberated the country. In some estimations, people say we messed those countries up. I mean, we chose sides. We removed dictators. We put other people in. They end up being against us. I mean, we just kind of – I mean, we kept – it's almost like you're going in and you want some honey. And you're going and you're hitting that beehive a couple of times. You stirring the bees up. Eventually, one of them bees is going to come back and bite you. It's a good thing to go out and abroad and to liberate other companies and spread freedom abroad. But the reality is, I mean, you just said it. We need to be taking care of home. But at the same time, we keep putting our hands in all of these other territories. And it seems like we keep messing it up. So, I mean, being the world police right now, I mean, you know, it seems like it's not the right time, which I think was your point.
Correct. it's just not the right time. We don't have, and we don't have the resources. I mean, you know, we can't fund education properly. We can't fund healthcare properly. We can't fund taking care of our kids and Head Start and all these sorts of things and fund our Veterans Association properly. How are we going to fund a war? How are we going to fund to go out and liberate and free people to do things that we ourselves aren't even able to do here? I don't understand that. So,
you know what's interesting?
Now
I was going to say, you know, what's interesting is that the fact that you mentioned all of those that list of things we need to take care of, and I know that when Osama bin Laden hit the towers, his whole idea was not really to take over America, right? His idea was really to put us in a financial bind that would really cause us chaos for an extended period of time, and if by any measure, I think he adequately made a step in that direction. And so it seems like to me that other countries are taking kind of a play out of his book to say, if we keep America engaged in conflict, we keep making them spend money the way that they're doing. They're not producing anything. Mm-hmm. They're not educating their kids, right? And they're going out here, and eventually you can end up bankrupting a company, a country, and then you can take over them, right? Because if you continue to say, let me go over here, let's spend some time over here in Iraq. You fight over there in Iraq. You spend some money over there. Congress ain't doing nothing. Congress is helping things out for these other countries because they're not funding anything. They're not creating jobs and generating revenue so they can put that money back into the economy, paying taxes, things of that nature. We're just bleeding our resources. We're going over there. Now they want us over in the Middle East. Now they want us over there in Ukraine. Now they want us over there in Russia. So eventually, these little slow, you know, almost like the death by a thousand cuts, these individual conflicts would do exactly what Osama bin Laden set out to do many, many, many years ago with 9/11, was to bleed America dry of their resources, of their financial resources. And it seems to me that they're certainly taking steps to do that. Because every little conflict, being a world police, you keep spending money, but you're not getting anything coming in. We're in a bad situation. What do you think?
Oh, for sure. I mean, for sure. And the unfortunate part is that we haven't figured out that this is what happened and that was what the real plan was. And so it's amazing to me. I mean, I know this is probably going to sound really weird and crazy, but you know, we really need to pay attention to television shows that we watch that have all these sorts of theories popping up in the background, like the 24s of the world and the units and shows such as that. And having just watched Captain America yesterday and what its premise was about was the whole thing around instilling fear. And yet, you know, they were willing to kill millions, the other billions in the world would be beholding unto them. And so you have to wonder, is this already happening in our society? And it just dressed up a little bit and we haven't figured it out. And so I don't take anything for granted. I don't take anything as all that could never happen because we living in such a time now in these technological advances and how they're able to track you every kind of way. I mean, if you've got any imprint online, they know everything about you. And then the fact that in that movie they talked about they could predict what you were going to do in the future based on your past.
Right.
That was, I don't know if you remember that part, but that was pretty profound to me. Mm-hmm. That they knew whether or not you were pretty much going to be productive or you was going to be non-productive and a waste on society based on what you had done in your past and what they projected you to be able to do in your future. And so if they didn't deem you necessary or worthy, you were on the hit list to be, you know, dealt away with. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, and that's a reality, too. There's absolutely technology that exists today that does that type of prediction based on your past behavior. And in fact, that's one of the studies in artificial intelligence that they're doing now is the fact to look at social networks, look at social how you're spending your time to be able to do that. I mean, that's an ongoing research. So that's not just fiction. I mean, nonfiction. That's actually that's not just fiction. That's nonfiction. So that's a reality in our society today about being able to do that. So that is taking place today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So I want to kind of move in that direction. Now, we talked about this foreign issue of Ukraine. We talked about the heightened levels of sensitivity with Russia and the fact that, you know, there's a possibility of us continuing to bleed our resources. And so now we have this immigration issue, right? So the fact that all of these young men and women coming over to America. So, again, the question is America the world police? Now, we got conflict over in the Middle East. We got Tel Aviv. We got Russia. We got we got Iran. We got Ukraine. Everybody's acting, and we have our tentacles in all of those issues. And now here we are having these kids coming to the United States. How do we address all of these things simultaneously?
Well, you really can't. I mean, you have to address one at a time, because if you try to go into all of those places, you're going to deplete your reserve, and then what you're going to have to do as a nation that you haven't done in 50 years is reinstitute the draft. You're going to have enough people to go fight. So you have that as one issue. The other thing is we have to determine what's the benefit to us as a country. You know, which one of those issues has a direct impact on the life of the American people? And I'm going to say I don't think neither one of them do. I could be wrong. I haven't done all the research, so I don't want nobody calling talking about what's going on in Israel. And I mean, because people have this real, what's the word? Some Americans have this real affection toward Israel, and I'm not sure why. I think I know why, but I'm thinking it has to be something other than that, because nothing else that you do represents that. If Israel is so important because of your religious beliefs,
yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Then how you live your life should be just as important. How you treat others should be just as important, because He left us with instructions, and he said to take care of the least of these, the widow, the children, the elderly, to provide for, to be there for. And how can you be so concerned about his return and where he's going to be when he comes back, and yet you're not taking care of his people while you're getting ready for that return? So I struggle with that. I struggle with this fascination of what we have to go and do for Israel, and we are friends of Israel. Well, we should be friends of humans. You know,
right.
We should be friends of people, and we should do what's right for everyone, not just for Israel. Because if Israel is out of order, then we need to deal with Israel when Israel is out of order. Because that means if I don't adjust anything, then when some other country gets out of order who I might not be as close as friends with, and I try to go say something to them, and we're like, but you ain't saying nothing to Israel, which is where we find ourselves in right now. We find ourselves in a pickle because we have supported and then withdrew support and then gave people some weapons, and then we act like we didn't know we gave them to them. I mean, you know, we go back to Reagan and that whole fiasco. I mean, there have been too many times in history we've done this. And so
yeah.
We sit here and we're at the fallout of all these dirty deals we've done, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's
why I'm saying that, you know, being the world police is okay, but when you go out and you start to stick your hand in other people's issues, you start stirring the bee cage, you eventually get bit. And I think right now, this involvement, if you will, is coming back to bite us in so many different ways. And now that every time an issue comes up, the expectation is for America to be involved. Right.
Right.
And
right.
So you have this expectation, and quite naturally, President Barack Obama is being placed with the blame of everything that goes wrong in other countries and everywhere else around the world. It's his fault, right? I mean, that's what everybody says, right? But what's interesting is that Congress is not doing anything to help this president. Mm-hmm. You know, here we have world issues that we face, not just issues across the waters, but even here in the United States. Even if we were able to take care of our own, i.e., we talked about education, the criminal justice systems, jobs, you know, the fact that we need to build our infrastructure. If we take care of these things, then it's easy for Americans to say, yeah, let's go out and help, you know, Tel Aviv. Let's go out and help Israel. Let's go out and make sure that Russia is doing what they're supposed to do. Let's go out and take care of the immigrants. But we're not doing anything in the United States. We're not helping each other. We're not. I mean, we hear these reports of suing the president. We hear everybody talking about the president being being the lawlessness of the president. And so all of these infighting issues that we're having in the United States doesn't put us in a good position to go out and support anybody else. Because as long as we don't have our own house in order, to me it's very difficult for us to go out and help anybody else, because we're going to be stretched too thin, you're not going to be funded properly, and you're not going to have any way to sustain yourself for the long time. Whenever that we went into Iraq when I was in the Gulf War, you know, we went in and we got out, you know, and it was a kind of a quick thing. But when they went in this time for the war, it began to just drag and drag and drag along. And then they shift sources from there to Afghanistan. And then so now you begin to deplete these resources and not being able to replenish them. And then you're not taking care of home. Then you begin to see that we are becoming a nation that's in a disarray. And so you look on the one hand, the stock market at its highest, you have the 1% being richer than any other, have they ever been in our society, and then you got everybody else is suffering. Then you got people over in Russia acting a fool. Then you got people in Israel acting crazy. In the Middle East also in uproar. And then you got these immigrants coming into the United States. So all these things the president is juggling, and he's getting no support from Congress. And you have these people in the United States that keep talking bad about him, bomb threats in the White House, people calling him out his name, you know, and continue to do that. I don't see America being America as it used to be, when we used to, you know, hold the flag and say, yeah, let's go get them, let's do this, let's support each other, being on the same team. It seems like to me we're more fragmented today than we've ever been in our society, you know, before. So what's going on with America? So in that particular instance where they're being so fragmented and not coming together as a unit.
Well, all of that has to do with who's currently sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, you can't have a country headed in the same direction when on the very night of his inauguration, the members of the opposing party got together and decided how he was going to fail and how they was going to make sure he was going to fail, not realizing that if he fails, so does the country. And they still haven't figured that out. They still think that some kind of way they'll be separated from the demise of the United States of America, like they don't live here, like they're not a part of it. So therein lies the problem. We're not going to be able to be that America, quote-unquote, that we once were, which we were always divided. We just didn't know it because we didn't have 24-hour news channels telling us about it. Because let's be real, when the black soldiers came back, and we didn't fought in every war, let's just put that in the atmosphere first. There hasn't been a war that the United States of America has been involved in that black and brown people wasn't fighting in. So let's just say that first. Number two, when they came back from the wars, they was not treated with respect. They still were denied stuff, which is why you had Muhammad Ali be stripped of his title, because he was like, what I'm going over and fight some people for in Vietnam, they ain't done nothing to me. They not the ones that's not providing me with what I'm supposed to have as a citizen of this country. I was, even then was still treated as less than. So when you look at all of that, and you talk about, you know, this America that really never existed except for in our minds. I mean, let's just, I mean, we carry this view of America like we have been holding hands and singing Kumbaya, and we haven't. It was just covered up. We had a bunch of makeup on. But I bet if you went in any small city in the country, any small segment of this world, of the United States, and there were some severe areas of racism. You look at how our public schools have gone from where we were great in educating our children to where we are now. That's happened across the country on everybody's watch. Reagan's watch, Clinton's watch, both of the Bush's watch. So, you know, it happened. So, you know, all of that. The increase in prison grew under all, both parties. Clinton's watch, when he changed and did his crime bill, certified juveniles as adults as young as 13. Well, where are they going to go? You got to build some form to go to. So mass incarceration didn't just happen in the last 8 years. It's been mass incarceration for the last 40 or 50 years. So, you know, we want to act like the America has been this great place and we've always gotten along and we've cried the battle cry together. No, we haven't. We covered it up. It's just like the woman in the abusive relationship. She covers up for her husband because she needs him. We covered up for America because we needed America, and America needed us. So here we sit now in the bed of what we've been lying in, and we're trying to figure out how to get out of this burning bed. I don't have an answer to that. I really don't know. But what I do know is until we call, and this is what Iyanla Van Zandt says all the time, until we call a thing and give it a name, we're never going to get to the point we need to get to.
You know, there's an old adage where it says, united we stand, divided we fall. And if we don't get it together, you know, and I play chess. And so, I want to use this chess analogy. Russia could simply be using Ukraine as a pawn in its first move to be able to start to doing something. Because if you on the outside looking in and seeing how chaotic America is right now, it seems like Russia is in a good position to do something, make a major move. I don't know what that move is, but and China is in a good financial position for anything to happen to America. So we continue to have all this infighting and talking about the president and Congress not passing laws and they're not taking care of the environment. You know, they're not building infrastructure. United we stand, but it is true, divided we fall. Are we getting ready to go to the break? What's your final comments before we go to the break?
Well, I agree with all of that, but I think, you know, but you know, it's unfortunate that we know China's been over here buying up real estate in America for at least the last 5 years. You look at any major metropolitan city, and the ownership on that land and property and the big old buildings is China, and so we can play like it's on all of a sudden we're going to look at them and be like, well, when did this happen? Well, it's been happening, and we've been asleep at the wheel because we're so caught up in this nonsense of this do-nothing Congress who we need to get out them out of the way, that maybe if we did something that helped somebody other than myself, then I might see that, you know, things could be better. But I don't see us right now as a country doing that because, as I stated, When the leaders of the opposing party can have a meeting on the night of the inauguration of the first African-American president of the United States of America to say he will be a one-term president, we will make sure none of his policies go through, he will be a failure. If those are the leaders of the party. If the leaders of the party get together and say that, and then everything they do wraps around that, we don't have a chance until we get them out of there.
You got a point. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Steamer, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Bloom.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
Our news in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. The White House says Secretary of State John Kerry will travel to Egypt to push for a ceasefire as President Obama spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, that amid escalating violence between Israel and Hamas. Kerry is defending Israel's actions in Gaza, and as NPR's Sam Sanders reports, he says it's now up to the militant group Hamas to accept a ceasefire.
Secretary Kerry says war is tough, but Israel is justified in its attacks in Gaza. On Fox News Sunday, he pointed to tunnels constructed by the militant group Hamas. Kerry says they're an obvious tool to conduct raids on Israelis.
You have a right to go in and take out those tunnels. We completely support that, and we support Israel's right to defend itself against rockets that are, continuing to come in.
Kerry said any plan to stop the conflict can't reward, quote, terrorist behavior. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is also in the region to help work toward the deal. A ceasefire plan brokered by Egypt was rejected by Hamas last week. Sam Sanders, NPR News.
Thousands of Christians have fled the city of Mosul in northern Iraq under threat from the so-called Islamic State. NPR's Leila Fadel reports church leaders are calling for help from around the world.
There are some 250 Christian families on the outskirts of Mosul who fled here after the Islamic State, an extremist Sunni group whose brutality is unrivaled, gave them a choice: convert, pay a poll tax, or die. So most fled, but fighters from the Sunni extremist group robbed them of their homes, their gold, their money, their passports, and in some cases, even medicine before they left. There are no Christians left in Mosul, the displaced say. Those that did say converted out of fear so they could keep their money and their homes. Leila Faldin, NPR News, Erbil.
In north-central Washington state, a massive wildfire continues to burn, fueled by dry conditions and gusty winds. Around 50 fires are burning across the state, destroying several houses and forcing evacuations. Mick Mueller, fire information officer with Central Washington Interagency Communications Center, says the largest of the fires is still spreading quickly.
1,000 here, 500 here, and a couple hundred over here. So the scale is humongous. Actually, and the largest fire is the 217,000-acre fire. The Carlton Complex is the largest fire in Washington history right now.
No serious injuries have been reported. The National Interagency Fire Center says two military air tankers are being sent from Wyoming to help fight the wildfires in the Pacific Northwest and elsewhere. The state's Governor Jay Inslee says many of the fires burning across the state were started by lightning and fanned by gusty winds. The wisecracking star of TV's Maverick has died. James Garner was found dead of natural causes at his house in Los Angeles. He made several movies and was nominated for an Oscar in 1985. James Garner was 86 years old. This is NPR. U.S. and European leaders are demanding that Russian President Vladimir Putin make sure rebels in Ukraine give international monitors full access to the wreckage site of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17. Russian separatists claim they have the black boxes from the plane and have removed victims' bodies from the crash site. 45 years ago today, American astronauts took a few small steps and made a giant leap as the first humans to walk on the moon. NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports NASA is commemorating the historic event online with the hashtag Apollo 45.
Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong left Earth and made history on July 20th, 1969.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now, social media users can share memories of that day using hashtag Apollo45. Aldrin told NPR's Scott Simon how he thinks the moon landing changed the world.
Well, it certainly gave us hope that the big ocean of space could be traversed with degrees of confidence and not only the dreams of the moon.
Aldrin said it also gave hope to dreams of exploring asteroids and one day, landing on Mars. Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News.
R.J. Reynolds is vowing to fight a Florida jury's decision to award nearly $24 billion in punitive damages to the widow of a smoker who died from lung cancer. Officials with the country's second biggest cigarette maker say the damages awarded to Cynthia Robinson are grossly excessive and that the company plans to appeal. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
It's time for Blackacre Policy Forum, a progressive think tank founded by Leo Baron Hicks, a place where a new dialogue concerning public policy can find innovative strategies and bold solutions. Welcome to Blackacre Policy Forum.
I'm able to see clear the right, cause Louis H. Slattimore improved the light, and J.A. Burr invented the lawnmower. Let me expand the mind of all you young soldiers.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And yeah, that's right. It is time for our Blackacre Policy Forum. As I do every week, I ask you to go out there and take a look at this blog. If you haven't had an opportunity to do so, go out there right now. And that's blackacrepolicyforum.org. That's B-L-A-C-K. A-C, C as in Charlie, R as in Romeo, E as in Echo. Blackacre Policy Forum, F-O-R-U-M.org. All one word. And take a look at this blog by Leo Baron Hicks. He puts out so much wonderful, great, relevant material, classic material, because it is really timeless. I mean, the fact that he writes about something today, I mean, it lives on and on and on, and you can always get something out of it every time you read it. And I go out there quite often, and I'm going to read the one for today, and we're going to discuss it because we do have Leo Baron Hicks with us today. And it's always a pleasure having him on the line. And so I'm going to read the one that he has out there today. And it's entitled Immigration and the Religion of Hate. And it goes something like this. I know quite a few people who simply cannot tolerate peace, awash in malice, pining for conflict, reveling in animosity, and celebrating the hollow, horrific victory of confrontation. They are in love and with hate and are not happy unless they are mad about something. So they create drama at every run, at every turn. Now, I try to avoid these individuals, however, and whenever possible. But when it transcends the individual and becomes a part of our culture, malice is not so easily escaped. In America, there are certain hot-button issues that bring out the worst in us. Chicago over the 4th of July weekend evidences the depth of our self-loathing. Over a three-day period, approximately 80 people were shot, at least 16 fatally. Our hatred towards others is exemplified by our reaction to the humanitarian crisis at our southern border. Immigration touches upon a number of volatile issues, including race, policy, national sovereignty, and, of course, Obamaphobia. It thereby attracts all manner of bile. A Sunday, July 15, 2014, letter to editor of the Dallas Morning News entitled "Obama Wanted This" illustrated the point. The letter opens with the following passage. Some of you may think I'm heartless with what I'm about to say, but hear me out. All of the mess down on the border could have been avoided with President Obama sending the National Guard there to protect our borders. I believe this happened because he wants it to happen to get more minorities in this country who will vote for the Democrats who give away freebies. Screaming protesters in Murrieta, California turned back a busload of South American mothers, babies, teens, and tweens with American flags and signs that read, "Return to Sender." In Oracle, Arizona, protesters carried signs that said, "Send him to Coyote, Obama." In Westminster, Maryland, someone spray-painted on a wall, "No illegals," incorrectly spelled illegals, "here. No undocumented Democrats." To be sure, not all are hostile. Some champion the cause. There were, for example, counter-demonstrators in Oracle, Arizona, one of whom trumpeted a Meraki-er version of the Star-Spangled Banner, and Kathleen McQuillan, the Iowa program director of the Quaker-based American Friends Service Committee, questioned how the country could spend trillions on war and not have the pennies on those dollars to spend to take care of children. It is a simple thing to begin to say, what's important in this world? Even some minorities and progressives view immigrants unkindly. For the record, we are a country of immigrants, and many of the immigrants in question are children fleeing sadistic gangs and cartels created and sustained by Americans' undying love of narcotics and a war on drugs that is an absolute unmitigated failure. We have, therefore, afforded these vicious gangs, cartels with wealth beyond measure and a license to kill, much like alcohol prohibition empowered Al Capone in the 1920s. It was the Reagan administration in the 1980s that poured billions of dollars in support of brutal dictators, repressive regimes, and drug-dealing gangs like the Contras into the very countries from which the current crop of immigrants hail. But for the above, there would be no need for these immigrants to flee their countries in the first place. The journey is perilous. Many are raped, beaten, murdered, and exploited by the coyotes who shepherd them from the Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala across Mexico into a country which boasts, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of you teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest toast to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." We further note our tendency to lecture other countries as how they should treat their immigrants, while showing little compassion for those who bear hell just to reach ours. The point, however, is not to take sides. There are indeed legitimate concerns regarding our immigration policy, as well as most other issues of the day. Perhaps we can no longer be so generous. With our country, the inscription on the Statue of Liberty notwithstanding, maybe these and other immigrants should be turned away at the border. America is not responsible for the sins of the world, and we have our own people to care for. Chicagoans, who are also saddled with violent drug gangs, guns, and misguided domestic wars, and a host of other problems quickly comes to mind. Nevertheless, it is the policy of hate to which we object. It is the malice attached to the issue of immigration that we decry. It is the fury the body policy expresses towards the immigrants, the sheer unadulterated wrath we offer those yearning to breathe free. It is the name-calling, the degree of political vitriol we spit at those with whom we disagree. It is the belief that reasonable compromise is a sign of weakness and that the scorched-earthy policy of those who are determination to destroy it, they could prevail. And beyond the policy of hate, it is the religion of hate we most fear. When hatred becomes a creed, kindness, mercy, and humanity are noticeably absent. Facts are irrelevant, and what matters is not the truth, but my truth. There exists only the zealotry, the fanaticism, the intrinsic, the arrogance, the self-righteousness, and the intolerance of those who believe that we and only they are right. That anyone who dares to disagree abdicates their very humanity and must therefore be chastised, delegitimized, ostracized, marginalized, and if necessary, dehumanized. Heretics to be burned at the stake. Like all religion beliefs, we wear this hatred on our souls and in our hearts. It is therefore a little surprise that the most pious among us tend to be the most hateful among us. In conclusion, we realize that politics ain't being bagged and that the unchecked immigration poses a real and substantial threat to the nation. Nonetheless, unbridled malevolence, no matter the reason, regardless of the sources, injurious to both man and country. Compassion benefits the giver, therefore as much, if not more, than the receiver. Let us be forever reminded, all it takes to become a monster is to hate a monster. Leo Baron Hicks, founder and CEO of Black Acre Policy Forum. Let me welcome Leo Baron Hicks to the show. Leo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. It's a nice being with you.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Once again, amazing piece of work. You know, Jimmy and I talked about a little bit about the Immigration Party at the top, at the previous hour. And one of the questions I posed was that, is America the world police? You know, we looked at the issues over with Russia and the Ukraine. We look at the issues that are brewing over in Israel. We've been in conflict with the Middle East. And we've been engaged in all of these conflicts, and now we're trying to take care of this immigration issue. You know, is it really our responsibility to be concerned with all of these issues, immigration in particular?
I think the answer is yes, but I also think the answer is we better be damn careful of how we intervene in other countries, because it was America that armed Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. We're the ones who gave him his weapons of mass destruction. And when he was killing his own people with the weapons that we gave him, we turned our head and looked the other way. It was America who armed Osama bin Laden when he fought the Russians in Afghanistan. And it was America that created the very situation, drug gangs, the repressive regimes in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Nicaragua, from which the current crop of immigrants come from. So if we're going to be the world's police, we better do a good job of creating a better situation than when we went in.
Absolutely amazing. You know, so if we continue to do this, and we had this discussion earlier, too, about the fact that, you know, sometimes it may be just best to keep our nose out of it because of those issues you just cited, right? The fact that when we do put our hands in, we end up being unintended consequences, right? You try to go in and liberate or spread freedom abroad, but you end up turning a country inside out, you know? And so we went out and tried to participate in other activities, and now we've created this immigration problem. And so President Bush you know, sign into law and says, you know, we want to help these people as they come in. So why is Obama getting the blame for it?
You know, I don't know. That's why I wrote, quite frankly, the post, because when religion becomes a hate, when hate becomes a religion, all reason and rationale and goodwill just fly completely out the door. The letter to the editor of the newspaper blames Obama. Ted Cruz blames Obama. But they're strangely silent when it comes to Ronald Reagan and what he did in the 1980s. I mean, the level of hatred directed at Obama, where everything is Obama's fault, is just amazing to me. And don't get me wrong, I'm not carrying Obama's water, but there is simply no rhyme or reason for the irrationality of the hatred directed towards Barack Obama, directed towards those people who believe in same-sex marriage, directed towards those people who believe in reproductive freedom. It is just vicious, it is cruel, and it is irrational.
You know, when we look at this and the fact that we have this immigration problem now, and there's, I think we got record numbers at the border now, and they're citing the fact that these immigrants are going to become Democrats, and the fact that they want to be, you know, keep Democrats in power. It seems like what they're trying to say. So what is motivating this hate? I mean, you know, and Mandela said people are not born hating, right? So some have to be fueling this hate. What do you think it is?
The browning of America.
Jima, what do you think about that? I think you share those.
I agree. It's really just that simple. It's really not a problem that needs to be solved by a physicist or a therapist of any. It's real simple. This one is real simple. And Leo hit it right on it. It's the browning of America. That's it. The fear that I'm going to lose something that I've always had, although it really wasn't mine because I stole it in the beginning. So their sheer source of power comes from dishonesty and thievery and changing history and rewriting history to fit, you know, so that they would be seen to be superior. So now that people there's a consensus that America is browning, and that there is eventually they will not be the majority, but the minority. There's a fear there. I mean, and when you are afraid, you do some crazy stuff when you're scared. And this is where they are. They're afraid of losing power that was never theirs in the beginning.
So you, do you believe, Lee? I'm gonna pose this question to you. Do you believe that the inactivity of Congress is making a statement by saying, if we're moving in that direction, well, I don't care what happens to America in the future because I'm not going to be a part of it. And if you're going to have it, we're going to make sure it's the worst it can be for you.
Well, I don't know if Congress's inactivity is occasioned by a do nothing attitude. I think what happened is the House of Representatives have been hijacked, quite frankly, by a bunch of lunatics who really have fed into the religion of hate. I mean, they hate with a passion. Now, I don't like Sarah Palin, but I don't hate Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like Newt Gingrich, but I don't hate Newt Gingrich. Mm-hmm. But some of these people, they just hate beyond hate to the point that they're just blind to everything else.
Yeah. So, Jim, what do you think this is hate?
I agree with that. I agree with that 110%. It's a difference of disagreeing and not liking someone and then hating someone. When you hear how they speak about certain people, it's just vile. It's hostile. It's angry. And I can disagree with the person who doesn't feel as though I should have complete control of my body without calling them out of their name. without using some sort of disparaging comment about them, without referring to them as something less than human. I can still have that disagreement and not go there. They don't know how to do that. They go straight to name-calling and bitterness and vile and anger and just hatred. Like, as Leo said, it just goes straight to hatred simply because they disagree with your thoughts on women's rights or women's health or, you know, whatever the main social topic is, same-sex marriage. And you know, it's not that I agree with same-sex marriage, but I think you ought to be able to choose what you want to do. And whoever you serve will deal with you on that day. I'm not losing any sleep over that. That's not having an impact on my day-to-day life. But I agree, they have turned, and yet in the same vein, though, those same religious nuts, as we have called them, have no compassion to the other side of what they say their moral beliefs are. Because there should be compassion for the least of these. If you're really practicing Christian principles and you really want to be Christ-like, then there's compassion there. There wasn't any hatred there. So they're a bunch of hypocrites. I don't know any other way to say it. They're a bunch of hypocrites, and nothing that they do fit into being a nation that's supposed to build on Christian principles. We're not acting like that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree with you, Leo. So when you're faced with somebody that has removed all rationale from their mind, and they're dealing more with emotion, then there's really nothing that we could do to persuade or convince them about any issue, because it's kind of embedded in their core. It's a part of their belief. When we talk about religion, that's a strong word, right? Because there's something you believe, you have to believe. And so how do you deal with people that has that belief and not really have any kind of rationale behind it?
Well, you know, it's difficult. I mean, there are certain people you simply can't reason with. And
mm-hmm.
and one of the problems with having a religion is it tends to produce zealotry. If you know, you can be a religious zealot, just like those people who crashed the planes into the tower in New York. They were absolutely persuaded that their God was on their side, which caused them to do something completely horrific. So it is the extremism and the zealotry of hatred that I think we have to guard against. Because no one has a monopoly on morality. The only thing I can think of, Pat, is that love conquers all. Mm. And if you can, your job, my job, is to love those people with whom we disagree.
You know, and I think that's exactly President Obama's strategy, has been his strategy. And that's why I say he is probably the best person that the Lord could have put in this position for this time. You know, because he has a temperament that is kind of, you know, even keel for the most part. And he tries to always extend that hand, always to try to show love, because people come out and say some of the craziest things about him with no facts. I mean, the fact that they challenge him on his birth certificate, the fact that they call him out his name all the time, the fact that they do, you know, everything. So he's the right person to show love, if you will, at this particular time. In order for us to be going through this season, because this is a really bad season. Jimmy, do you think we can recover? I mean, you know, you can burn a house down for the most part, and everything is gone, and you don't have anything left. You know, are we in a situation where we're in a burning building right now, and then when the president leaves, that we're going to be pretty much it's going to be too hard to rebuild?
Well, it's definitely going to be hard to rebuild, but then you have to figure out what it is that you want to rebuild. I don't know if I want to rebuild America to where she was, where she was dishonest and cruel and just not truthful about her and her own history and her past. I don't know if I want to live there, because in living there, it caused us to be complacent in doing some of the things we needed to do. As I stated earlier in the first hour, you know, it's not like we were all standing around singing Kumbaya together anyway. We were singing Kumbaya in pockets. We've never been that united. We said we were united, and we act like we're united. It's just like, when somebody does something, all of a sudden we want to stand together. But the whole time, you can't even stand me. You know, the wars I fought in, I came home, and I couldn't even sit down at the lunch counter. I couldn't even enroll my child in school. I couldn't even go and vote without counting some dadgum jelly beans in a jar. This is the same America. All of this happened at the same time. I fought for a country that wouldn't let me vote. Stand that. So I don't necessarily know if I want to rebuild America to that. I think we just, need to, let the chips fall where they may, but we've got to be honest about what we want to see. And if the house that burned down wasn't adequate, why would you rebuild the same house? If it needed something more than what it was given to you, but you made it work because that's all you had. But now that you have the ability to build what will satisfy you and suit your needs, why would you rebuild something that's not going to do that?
Yeah, excellent point. So Leah, you mentioned that the browning of America. Do you think the election of President Barack Obama kind of maybe exposed America, put America in a position to kind of really show who they really are or were, basically?
Well, I think the election of President Obama, and more importantly, the re-election of President Obama, because that's what really hurts those people who practice the religion of hate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that certainly says a great deal about America, and to some extent, though, I think it hastened and highlighted the fears of those people who are concerned about the browning of America. The notion, for example, that illegal aliens or undocumented Democrats is absurd, or that
right.
or that people from Guatemala are going to vote in our elections and tilt the elections in favor of Democrats is equally absurd. There is no evidence whatsoever that anybody has been able to prove, or show, rather, that undocumented immigrants are involved in our electoral process. It's been litigated, and there has been a dearth of evidence about that. But the religion of hate doesn't know any color, Mr. Cook, because there are African Americans who hate white people.
Yeah.
Viciously.
Yeah.
Who blame the white man for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just as guilty of practicing the religion of hate as those people who hate Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Leon, one more question before I let you go here. You mentioned that we are a country of immigrants. So what's going on with America's amnesia then? To forget that, they all came over here, not maybe under the same circumstance, but certainly similar circumstances to America, wanted to get away, to be in a free society and to be a better life for themselves. So what happened to people's understanding of where they came from?
I think it's intentional ignorance. I think it's willful forgetfulness. And I think to some extent the attitude is America was open and free, but now that I got mine, it's not open and free.
I saw Jim when we were looking at HBO the other night, and one of the guys on there was an immigrant, and Bill Maher actually asked him that same question about the fact that you came over here under those same circumstances. Now that you got yours, to Leo's point, you don't want to open up the borders. So Jimmy, question to you. I mean, what's going on with even the ones that are not necessarily in politics that have been able to benefit recently? Why do they have this same hatred towards the new immigrants that are coming over?
Because you can't make that logical. I don't know why. I can't answer that because I don't think like that. I don't have it in me to think that irrational. I really don't. I can't put a reason as to why, they have such a hard time grasping the fact that you too was an immigrant or somebody in your family was, And so you benefited from the shores of America being open and receptive to bringing in people. So how now should we close them all off because you here and you feel like you what you have is yours and can't nobody take it? Which nobody's coming over here to take none from you anyway. There, you know, if we were to fund and construct bills that brought in our infrastructure jobs and opened up our lives up in terms of technology and different things, we have more than enough people that can work. So they're not going to take nothing from you. So, I mean, you know, so those types of jobs, and there will always be segments. There will always be people that will be in the service industry because somebody will always have to wait on somebody else. And that's okay. But they're not taking your job from you. And so for them to always talk about they coming over here trying to take our job, what job are they trying to take that you're going to go get? That's the thing that always gets me. What job is that immigrant that's coming over here going to take from you, or even your child or even your grandchild? I would like an answer to that. So it's hard for me to rationalize that because to me I'm like, Leo, it's just irrational.
Leo, do you think the browning of America had anything to do with the psyche of these police as they go around the country in separate incidents, you know, beating African Americans up? Specifically, we had an issue with Eric Garner a couple of days ago being put in a chokehold by the New York Police Department, so at least in that territory. Do you think that has anything to do with it in their mind? I mean, I asked the question earlier. I mean, we don't get the benefit of the doubt when there's an incident. But for the most part, you know, he ended up dying from something that the police did to him for nothing. He didn't really do anything. So you think the browning of America has anything to do with their psyche?
No. The criminal justice system has always been the most racist institution in America. It was that way from the very time or the very moment we landed on the shore. So the criminal justice system as an instrument of blatant racism has always been with us long before the browning of America.
Wow. As always, Leo, it's always a pleasure. Any final thoughts?
None at all. I appreciate you, and I appreciate that rap ditty that you used to open up Blackacre.
You know, we actually had him on last week. Lack. He's a what they call an educated hip hop rapper, and he gives a positive message about a lot of issues. And so I'm going to actually shoot you a couple of his songs. And he's an entrepreneur, graduated from Rutgers University, friend of the show. He calls in at least once every 6 months or so. And we, you know, we interview him regularly. We push his music and things of that nature. So, yeah, I'm glad that it's a perfect marriage for his message and your message. So, I thought it was a great thing to do.
Hey, I like it, and I appreciate you and Jima.
All right, thanks a lot, Leo Baron Higgs, everybody.
Take care.
All right, you too. All right, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll return momentarily.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, Tailor-Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ash Gma says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Point friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. All right, it's time to see what's trending. It's time to see what's trending. All right, let's take a look at what's hot. All right, first up, James Garner. For those that may not know, but he was an actor. Looks like he's passed away. The reaction to the death of James Garner is a report from the AP. Jim was a mentor to me and a friend, and I will miss him. Tom Selleck, who early in his career guest starred on Garner series The Rockford Files. Garner was truly a man's man. Jim was a friend, and when he came to Indianapolis as a spectator and place car driver, we obviously welcomed him with open arms. So James Garner, you may know him from the Rockford Files. And also, he was a star of Maverick. He has passed away. Jimmy, what are your thoughts about James Garner?
Well, I'm a diehard Rockford Files fan. One of my girlfriends on Facebook actually said, "Oh, she copied me on a post and mentioned Rockford Files because she, you know, we old souls." And so, I even catch some of the episodes on the MeTV channel, the same channel I'll catch Perry Mason on and Columbo and Bonanza and all that, those types of shows. So he was definitely one that was. From all the reports, he was active. He wasn't just an actor. He was one of the ones that kind of crossed over from movies and television. People knew him in both genres of acting. He was also involved in some civil rights things. He was part of March on Washington. And so, you know, it seems as though that generation of those that were able to bridge the gap, like we're losing them, day by day, and so I'm hopeful that there's some ready to stand in the gap and to move right into those positions. But yeah, he was a good guy. He was one of the good ones.
Yep. Also trending is Rory McIlroy wins the British Open for the third major championship. You know, we've been talking about Tiger Woods and the fact that he's not been winning at the rate at which people most likely wanted him to. I mean, quite naturally, when you go through any type of significant emotional event that he did, you know, it does have an effect on your psyche. And so there's been a few commentators talking about how poorly he's done and things of nature. But when you set the bar so high, it is obviously it takes a toll on your fans and your fans base, you know, your expectation to keep winning. So, you know, and winners know that. Winners, you know, been in that situation. So, but looks like taking his place, not necessarily in talent, but at least for notoriety right now is Rory. So, I hear a lot of good things about him, and he's now won another major, and so I think it's going to be pretty good to hear to see where this goes. And the fact that, you know, sometimes, you know, it takes a rival in order for people to kind of get out of their seat and do better, right? So if Rory continues to do this well, you know, I think it maybe light a fire in the Tiger, you know, because it's between Rory, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods. They were the three golfers that won three majors by the age of 25. So I think this is a good thing for the sport. I think it is it's certainly good to have, you know, two or three good people. So when they're both on the ticket, it'll kind of, you know, raise a heightened awareness of the event. And I think Rory will certainly provide that to Tiger Woods. So another thing that I wanted to talk about is Captain America. We actually got a chance to see the movie, and it was a great movie. I mean it was packed with action. The storyline was great, plausible, in fact, especially under today's conditions. And so, but it turns out there's going to be a black Captain America. Jim, what do you think about that?
I think that's awesome, long overdue. It's going to be a black Captain America in the comic books, in the comic strip. It's actually going to be who the Falcon character now becomes Captain America. So I think that is awesome on so many levels. Like I said, you know, we oftentimes, our kids long for superheroes as well. And whenever we find one that looks like us, you know, we gravitate towards that. So I'm excited about it. I you know, might make me pick up a comic book again, something I haven't done in years. And so I'll be visiting the local comic store over there in Firewheel Mall and seeing what they got and checking them out, make sure they're doing it justice.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly room enough for an African-American superhero, especially one that's not drunk or not, you know, misbehaving, things of that nature. I mean, it's certainly time for one. And not to mention, you know, when we went to Walmart the other day, and which I just, you know, don't do, but I, you know, supporting my wife, I go out there every now and then. And so going out to Walmart, you know, I noticed that there's so many different flavors of bread. Right, so many different flavors of cereal. It just goes to show you, you know, having one or two of anything is just not the American way, right? So just to having one superhero, you know, I think there's room for an African American superhero. I mean, so it won't you know, put America in a different light if we had a black or a Hispanic or a Chinese or anything. You know, I think it opens up for all the kids to want to be and want to see themselves in a more positive manner, because that's what it all boils down to, right? Being able to have a young man, a young woman look up to something that's positive as opposed to negative. So I agree. I think it's an absolute wonderful thing to have an African American superhero. So who's going to follow, Jim? Who's going to follow the next with the next superhero?
Well, you know, they already were in talks about Spider-Man. So I believe one of the characters, I think Spider-Man is going to be, as our son says, a brown person. So that caused some issues. What's funny is it seems like Marvel is a little bit ahead of DC Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Because I haven't seen any major changes in DC Comics in terms of the browning of its superheroes. The one that they had, Green Lantern, they haven't had a brown Green Lantern in a while now. So DC Comics might want to do its program and step up some things. I mean, at some point, somebody that was on the galaxy with Wonder Woman, there had to be somebody there of color. So there needs to be a sister girl in looking like Wonder Woman at some point.
I hear you. All right, that's a look at what's trending, and that's a look at what's trending. All right, Jimmy. So as we get ready to kind of wrap things up, give me your final thoughts.
Well, I've had a lot to say today. I think I may have gone overboard to the listening audience on my rant, but I think it's important that you know, we take a look at things as they really are and not as we think they are, because we can only make the adjustments in reality. It can't be make believe and made up stuff. We gotta tackle these things head on, and we gotta be truthful with ourselves about who we are. If I look in the mirror every day and I don't realize that I'm 30 pounds overweight and I'm just saying I'm thick, or you know, I'm solid, you know, whatever other term I choose to give myself. You know, when I collapsed out there on outside because it's 100 degrees and my body can't take it, you know, at some point I got to realize it's not just that I'm thick or I'm solid. I need to lose 30 pounds. And so America has to take a look at herself and say it's not just that. You know, it's President Obama in the White House. It's not just that there's that family that lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's the fact that we have never really admitted to the ills that we have. And we see it in pockets. And, you know, the different movies come out when we're watching the movie about the Tuskegee Airmen, when we're watching the movie, you know, about Jackie Robinson in 42, or we're seeing these different things that come up. And in the backdrop of those, there's always a racial element to it, because that was the time in which those things transpired. But we want to act like it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, when you're denied access to a library, as what happened, I want to say it was 50 years ago this week with the Greensboro City down in Greensboro, South Carolina, when they sat in at the library. They was trying to go to the library. They wasn't, you know, that was it. And so that happened 50 years ago. And when you're at the counter at Woolworths trying to order you some lunch, and yet you just came back from fighting for your country and you still got to go around to the back side. When you look at these movies about our entertainers, you know, the James Browns and Back with the Temptations and the movie about the Delphonics, when you're looking at the Five Heartbeats and how they took them off the cover of the album because they wanted to reach a wider audience. Well, what was that about? You know, and so although those very same people was listening to the music, and so when they were separating on American Bandstand and they couldn't, Ray Charles couldn't do this, and certain places we couldn't go, we had to go through the back door, but everybody that was in there listening to us didn't look like us. But I couldn't come to the front door. I had to go to the side. I couldn't stay in the very hotel that I just performed in. I mean, that's the fabric of America, and we act like it didn't happen. We act like it just happened for a moment, and you know, I'll be 46 next month, and that we're talking 4 years before. We keep saying 50 years ago, 50 years. That really wasn't that daggone long ago. When I look at the fact that I'll be 46, that wasn't that long ago. And so we've got to take a look at where we are and admit that, you know, we've made some mistakes here. And we're not all that put together as we think we are. And we really need to fix it. And we need to get some people out of Congress. You know, we need to keep talking about they want to sue the president. I say we figure out who we need to contact to sue Congress. You know, whose name should go at the top? Should it be Mitch McConnell or is it John Boehner? You know, who is it that we get to sue? Because we need to sue somebody too, for lack of for not doing their job and dereliction of duty. That, you know, we need to put all them terms out there, the legal terms, and see how much traction we get. So this is unacceptable. And so, but we've got to stay on course. We can't be distracted. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, but there's also a lot going on right here. And so we've got to know how to compartmentalize those things and focus on, you know, what's happening here at home. Not saying I'm not concerned about Russia and Ukraine and Israel and Gaza and the people down at the border. I'm not saying I'm not concerned about that, but I'm looking at this do-nothing Congress who has not signed a jobs bill that they claim they ran on in 2010, which is how I guess they regained control of the House, and we're 4 years later and we still don't have one jobs bill. So I need to know who do I need to talk to about that. We got highways and bridges that are crumbling every single day, and yet we can't get an infrastructure bill through Congress to put people back to work, although you ran on jobs. So, you know, we there are things we can do, and we've got to be diligent, and we've got to stay focused on those things that we have a little bit of control over. And let the other things take care of themselves, but we need to make sure we register to vote. We need to make sure that our brothers and sisters, our neighbors, our community, the people are registered to vote, that they're getting, if you're in a state that has changed its voting laws, that you get the necessary documentation together so that come November in these midterm elections, you are registered, you can vote, you can participate in the process. So that is the one thing that we all can do, and that's go vote.
Outstanding. And we got a couple more weeks of the summer program, and there's still time to make a difference out there in society. So go out to TaylorMade101.com and look at and click on Hunger Free to send your donations out there. If you want to come out and volunteer, we always can use your help volunteering. We had upward of 50 kids pretty much on a regular basis. We feed them in the morning. We feed them in the afternoon. We teach them math, reading. They do some reading. We do writing skills. We teach them life skills, checkbook writing, technology. You know, so science, technology, engineering, mathematics, all of that is happening. And again, you can it's easy to contact us. You can always tweet Jema at ASKJEMA. That's ASKJEMA. Anything else you want to talk about the summer program, Jema?
No, it's just that we're in our final 2-week stretch. I'm excited about it. It's been a challenging summer so far, but a rewarding one as well. And I look forward to these final 2 weeks. So I can get some rest. but other than that, it's been a joy.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in, and a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jema Hill Cook. Now, you can follow her on Twitter, and that's at Ask Jema. That's ASKJEMA. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sound of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.
Thank you.